Welcome to the Bioneers 2006 Conference Workshop, Visionary Architecture and Community Building in Marin County. We join the session as it begins.
Hi, welcome to our session on Visionary Architecture and Community Building in Marin. We have a distinguished panel who's active in working to build a new vision of Marin. And we'll discuss what we're doing to create and implement a Marin that can meet the challenges we face in this century and beyond. I'm Sim van der Ryan, a Marin resident since 1958, professor of architecture and ecological design at UC Berkeley for many years, former California state architect under Governor Jerry Brown, author of 7 books, including I won't name them all, but actually the 2 latest ones after the session of your... Andres and I will be signing over at the book store, Ecological Design and Design for Life, and Andres' new book, The Sustainability Revolution. I don't know, summarize my 45 years of doing this work. A recent New York Times profile of me wrote, quote, long before sustainability became the buzzword du jour, there was Sim van der Ryan, the intrepid pioneer on the eco-frontier. Our panel includes Dr. Francis White, who's the president and superintendent of the Marin Community College District with its 2 campuses in Kentfield and Indian Valley. Under her leadership, the college is regenerating its 2 campuses through a $250 million bond measure and also rethinking a curriculum appropriate to the future needs of our society and region. The next speaker will be my colleague, Andres Edwards, an educator and author of The Sustainability Revolution and co-author of and co-director of the Center for Regenerative Design at the college. And... last, but of course not least at all, is Charles McGlashan, who since his election to the Board of Supervisors in 2004, Charlie? I thought so. Remember you down there with the sign. who has become really, in my years in Marin, we've had one outstanding supervisor before Charlie, and that was Barbara Boxer, who is fearless. And Charles is fearless and who is... the most active, passionate, and effective advocate for many new initiatives in the county around issues of energy, transportation, housing, social equity, and the development of a landmark new county general plan designed to make the community designed to make community sustainability the yardstick for a livable future. Can you all hear me okay back there? Okay. So we'll each speak about 10 minutes, which will leave plenty of time for dialogue. How many folks here are from Marin? Well, that's good. If you're not from Marin, you're also welcome to ask a question. Last night, I had a dream that I'd like to share with you. I was at a meeting of a large number of strangers, each of whom read or told a story about themselves. And we all felt a powerful connection to add on to each other's stories and connect them to our own experience. We were strangers, yet we all felt like one family. It was a very amazing and kind of positive dream. Now, buildings and environments and architecture can tell a story that we can all feel part of. In our institutions, creating and finding a common story that we connect to and that we can add on to is a difficult process because people don't understand that the design process is all about sharing the story of place, of one's work, of one's dreams, and of what really moves you, your heart and your soul. You know, architecture is just... become a commodity like everything else, and that's why we wind up with, as James Kunstler's words, a country that feels like more and more places feel like the geography of nowhere. You don't know where you are. Now, Our Center for Regenerative Design at the College of Marin is working to create a green story, along with other people who are working on the project. The process of getting there requires an open process of communicating and sharing aspirations. But it's hard to break the hurdles of dealing with the dominating metrics of dollars, space, time, and schedules. An early pioneer, the systems analyst Donella Meadows, I don't know how many of you know of her, one of the founders of the Club of Rome, in a famous paper entitled Places to Intervene in a System, makes the point that while most people believe that numbers are the key leverage point, they rarely change the behavior of a system. The numbers don't change the behavior of the system. And to quote her, putting different hands on the faucets may change the rate at which they turn, but if they're the same old faucets plumbed into the same system, turned according to the same information and rules, the system isn't going to change very much. Leverage has less to do with pushing levers than it does with disciplined thinking, combined with strategically, profoundly, madly letting go. And there was a wonderful quote about this very, very exciting green Texas Instruments plant. You know, first they were going to build it in China, and they said, no, we're going to build it here in Texas. And it's really one of the most advanced plants in the country. And the project manager said the same thing. She said, you know, when you go for the impossible, then, and it starts to work, then everybody claims a piece of it. Which to me means starting with people's dreams, aspirations, and questioning one's picture of what's true about the world. Once a group can truly share the fundamental aspirations, the impossible happens. The cobwebs of problems clear away, and the beauty, vision, and coherence manifest themselves. I believe we're ready for a new generation of visionary environmentalism and design based on the dream I related to you. In Marin, we live in the shadow of and are the inheritors of several generations of bold visionaries who questioned and defeated conventional models of progress, beginning in the early 1900s, where through the Kents and through the establishment of the Mount Tam watershed, I mean, it was the first, you know, they were thinking about watersheds. Even though we have to, because of our population, we got to get a lot of our water from the Russian River and other places. To their vision, we owe the reality that we here in Marin enjoy more protected open space than any other metropolitan area of a similar size. They preserve the Mount Tam watershed, which is an early act of ecological wisdom. Beginning in the early 1960s, Huey Johnson, Marty Griffin, Dave Pessinen, Ellen Strauss, Congressman Phil Burton, and Clem Miller, and others defeated attempts to build Marincello, a high-rise, you know, it was going to be these, yeah, you remember, huh? These 30-story towers. When you went through the tunnel to Fort Cronkite, that's what you would have seen. This whole, it looked like Singapore, all these towers that would have these wonderful views of the ocean. But, you know, the conventional wisdom said, why not? We can just build it. They defeated a plan to build a freeway to the coast at the newly established Point Reyes National Seashore, where I live. The Park Service maps even show that Sir Francis Drake, and then through Sam Taylor, it becomes a six-lane freeway so people can get to the beaches faster. Dave Pessinen was active in defeating PG&E's plans to build a nuclear plant on the fault line at Bodega Bay. And Ellen Strauss and others developed a plan to preserve Marin's ag lands and much more. The key aspiration in the past, up till now, has been preserving the land, and we've done a hell of a good job of it. But today, I think the environmental task is different. Today's aspiration is to regenerate our existing built environment and integrate it with its local natural and social ecology, to mitigate climate change, and build new infrastructure and communities free of fossil fuels, congestion, and alienation, and to educate and change our culture in the process. I see Marin County as an integral campus for relearning how to live. I think the campus wants to be the campus that and the College of Marin can be a spark plug, but I'd like to see the whole county basically be a campus. So that's my vision of what where I'd like to see us go. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon to all of you, and what an exciting opportunity to be here today participating in a panel to talk about green and sustainability, visionary architecture, and some of the exciting things that are happening at the College of Marin. I'm Frances L. White, and I'm superintendent and president at the College of Marin, and I'm quite delighted to be able to share some of the challenges, opportunities, and some outcomes that are happening today at the College of Marin. Sim mentioned that we were able to pass a bond measure to improve and upgrade and modernize our current facilities, which are 80 years old. That bond provided approximately $250 million from the voters. That was a great opportunity. The goal of the college district is to build at the highest green standard $250 million can afford us. And that is a serious goal because as the Board of Trustees developed its resolution to go out for the bond in 2004, it also developed a resolution that would require every single building at the college to meet LEED standards. And at that time, that was a great education process for our governing board because many of them were thinking ahead that here we are in Marin County, in one of the greenest counties in the world, and here's an opportunity to do the best we can and at the highest standard. So that was an opportunity. We also obviously would have challenges related to that because why? A budget is a budget is a budget. We weren't given $400 million, not that that would necessarily be enough, but the point of the matter is we did have to begin a process that would help bring the entire institution, if you will, all of the faculty, staff, all of the stakeholders at the institution on board with buy-in, understanding the importance of the green principle, the importance of the sustainability principle in our buildings. And as Sim has said, buildings, environment, and architecture can tell stories. And one of the things we needed to do most at College of Marin was not only to regenerate and reinvigorate and revitalize our buildings, but also our curriculum, our enrollment, every single operational part of the institution that would make the institution the great institution it has enjoyed for many, many decades. So there were some challenges, and one of the things, you know, they always say, hindsight, 2020, hindsight, what could have been, should have been. One of the challenges was to design the design process. The institution went through a year, one solid year of education master planning, one solid year of considering conceptual designs and schemes, if you will, long-range master planning. And in and during that process, it was very exciting. I think maybe as many as 165 people participated, if not more, and not just only from our institution, but also from the community. So we had a pretty wide net cast, if you will, of ideas and thinking. The Center for Regenerative Design became an oasis during this process. You can imagine 100-some-odd individuals involved over months and months and months, almost 200 meetings after a year at least, And what was going to be the essence and the outcome, if you will, of where the vision would be for College of Marin? One of the greatest opportunities came about with the formation of the Center for Regenerative Design, and you're going to hear more about this from Andres. But I can tell you through the visionary advice and counsel, if you will, of Sim Van Der Ren, and by the way, he does this for a business, even if he won't tell you. If you're interested in that kind of consultation, you should talk to him. But nonetheless, Sim Van Der Ren and Andres Edwards and David Gottfried, who many of you will remember from the Green Building Council, really provided an opportunity to see things in a bigger picture and in a bigger way than just simply the lead bottom line. And of course, again, our goal is to build at the highest standard we can afford to build, given the dollars we've been given. Well, I'm also proud to say that after a year, there's been a very positive outcome in terms of regeneration, both in terms of where we're going with the facilities, the bond, and also where we are with our current curriculum. I am proud to say that we have been able to revitalize our nascent environmental science studies program that is going full-fledged. I'm proud to say that we have instructors who are teaching green architecture at the College of Marin. And I'm proud to say that we have courses being presented under community education, one of which Andres Edwards is teaching this term. So in terms of an opportunity with bond dollars to revitalize an institution for buildings, we're also using this as an opportunity to revitalize and regenerate and reinvent the College of Marin through its curriculum and academic offerings.
Thank you, Dr. White. Hello, everyone can hear me. I'd like to begin by giving everyone the larger context of greening of campuses nationwide, and then I'll go into more detail about the College of Marin and the Center for Regenerative Design. So in my book, The Sustainability Revolution, I try to talk about the larger conversation of sustainability. Well, in colleges and universities, there's a profound shift happening in the greening of campuses and universities nationwide. And this is happening at all levels. It's happening through academics, it's happening at the operations level, in the administration, and in the community and the outreach programs. So the question that comes up is, why is this important? Well, the first reason I come up with is because it's colleges and universities are really the training grounds for our next generation of leaders. And it is in these places that we really are instilling some of the values, some of the knowledge base, and some of the skill sets that are going to be necessary to deal with the problems that we're all confronting, and we, as a society and as a world, we will have to confront. We're also having our youth live daily with exposure to these new ideas, whether it be renewable energy or landscaping or organic foods. All of these things that are happening in colleges, for the students now, is becoming part of their daily lives because so many of these colleges and universities are implementing them in their programs. So in a sense, colleges are becoming living laboratories for these experimentations, which I think is at the essence of education in the first place. Another point that was actually brought up by Bill McKibben, who spoke at the ASHE conference just 2 weeks ago in Tempe, and it really reminded me. He mentioned how when we were all in college, there was such a strong sense of community. How when you often ask people who have been graduated from college, what were some of the most memorable times of your lives? So many of us think back to the college years. And why that is so important in terms of us extending that sense of building community into our times after college and in later life. And so many of us are trying to build communities to go back to those times to see what are the threads, what is at the foundation of building communities, and learn from that, from the college experience. The other piece of it is that we need to go beyond colleges, because even if we have hundreds, maybe thousands of green colleges, they'll just be islands, and we need to be able to extend these concepts and these ideas beyond the college campuses into the communities. And many of the programs nationally, whether it be food or transportation, are really integrating the college with the community, with the state, with the nation. So it's powers of 10 there. So there's a few key organizations that are driving this. The first one is ASHI, which I mentioned, which is the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. And their mission is really to promote sustainability at all levels of the university: governance, operations, curriculum, and outreach. They just had their first annual meeting a couple of weeks ago in Tempe. They had 168 colleges attend, 650 participants. It reminds me a little bit of the Green Belt Conference when they first had it, where they got double the number of people. They're blown away by how much enthusiasm. And again, it was a place where, for the first time nationally, all the, whether it's educators, maintenance folks, students, got together to exchange stories and learn from each other over two or three days of lectures and workshops, much like we're doing here this weekend. They also gave awards to certain colleges that are doing outstanding work. And just as an example, Lane Community College in Portland got one of the award for declaring carbon neutral by the year 2050. All their buildings will be LEED certified, much like College of Marin's will be, integrating sustainability into the curriculum and employing a full-time sustainability coordinator. And I'll get back to that because that's a key component that a lot of colleges are doing. Another organization is the U.S. Partnership, and this is part of a UN program. Again, their mission is to mainstream sustainability, and they have sector teams in business, in the faith sector, in higher ed, and in the K-12. And again, another opportunity for all colleges and university students, administrators, faculty to get together, phone conferences every 2 weeks, and share stories and share experiences. And this is funded in part by the Department of Agriculture and how they get together. So what are the trends that are happening in colleges nationwide? The first one I mentioned, the sustainability coordinators. There are currently 65 full-time paid sustainability coordinators in U.S. colleges and universities, and their role is primarily to act as the ambassador, if you will, for the college in promoting sustainability. So they work with the faculty, they work with the maintenance, they work in issues related to water, to food, to landscaping, to energy, even to academia. And it's some of them have paid positions, others have student volunteers and faculty that are getting involved in small groups. So there's a variety of ways that it's working together. But the essence is to have a group that is really looking at sustainability on campuses. Another key aspect is the whole notion of net zero greenhouse gas emissions. A lot of colleges, this is probably the fundamental theme at this conference, was how can colleges curb their carbon emissions? And some of them have set milestones and timelines. And there's actually some events, some national organizations, including one called Focus the Nation, which are going to do a one-day national symposia on January 31st, 2008, almost like Earth Day, although they don't like to equate it to Earth Day because a lot of people in this generation can't relate to Earth Day. It was so long ago. But the whole idea there is to have like a whole day where up to 1,000 colleges and universities can have like a teach-in or a learning session about climate change. There's also the Campus Climate Challenge, in which young people at colleges and universities and high schools are promoting 100% clean energy for their schools. And this is led in part by Billy Parrish, who was a student at Yale, who got so excited and felt so compelled about the climate change story that he dropped out of school and started this organization to devote full-time his efforts into promoting this issue. There's also sustainability degree programs, and this is really interesting because University of Arizona at Tempe just declared last week that they're starting a new school of sustainability where they're going to be offering a certificate program, a bachelor's, a master's, and even a PhD in sustainability studies as a way of integrating sustainability in their whole campus. And University of Arizona at Tempe is the largest college in the nation with over 60,000 students, so it's going to have a big impact. They got a grant, actually, from the Wrigley Foundation to launch them on that. But there are actually also smaller schools like Prescott College, New College of California, who are offering master's and PhDs in these issues, and even green MBA programs. Here in the Bay Area, we have the Presidio School of Management, and Dominican University is starting its own green MBA program. So the wave in promoting sustainability degree programs is definitely taking off, as are eco-literacy requirements, where schools are starting to promote a requirement in sustainability education. Chico State has the first endowed eco-literacy chair, and University of Washington just established a sustainability endowed professorship. So again, as colleges and universities begin to think more seriously about how do we promote these ideas, they're starting to establish these chairs, these departments. And I spoke to the eco-literacy chair at Chico State several months ago, and he said to me that he probably has the most powerful voice on the campus because he's representing all of the other departments. So when he goes to the school president or the administration and says, we need to look at promoting more renewable energy or whether it's something related to organic foods, he pulls all of the faculty, department heads, and the student governments and the student groups and goes to them. So he's almost like the point person, and he's thrilled about that. So here in Marin, we have two higher ed institutions, the College of Marin, a two-year community college, and Dominican University, which is a four-year university. And at the Center for Regenerative Design, our mission, which we really started at the beginning of this year, working in collaboration with Sim Van Drine and David Gottfried, and with Dr. White's office, to be the catalyst, to be the bridge between the College of Marin and even other institutions, including Dominican University, Marin County, and local organizations, to develop education programs, to develop internships, and work with the community in terms of figuring out what the skill set is that's going to be necessary for the graduates of our higher ed institutions. And in that way, we'll really be promoting a green economy in the county. And when we look at all of the factors that go into a green campus, they really apply as much to a campus as they do to any community, including the 10 areas: energy, water, the built environment, material resources and waste reuse, food, land regeneration, transportation, health and well-being, academics, and culture and community. These are 10 areas that we'll be looking at in terms of how can we start promoting education programs and actually on-the-ground programs with the college. So as a way to begin our dialogue with the community, we established working meetings with community organizations where we had a dozen or more nonprofit groups and green businesses from the county to hear what they had to say and to figure out what their needs are and what role the Center for Regenerative Design could play in working with them. And after those meetings, we established a series of community roundtables. They started in March, they went through May, and we picked certain topics including transportation, green economy, eco-literacy, natural capital, and sustainable community. And we tried a new format where we had a panel of five or six people, leaders from the community, and we each gave them about 5 to 8 minutes to talk, and the rest was all Q&A from the community to really get a dialogue going. And this season, we just had our first new season of community roundtables, and our focus is really on stories. We want to focus on people's individual stories in the community. And our first guest was last month. We had the Blunk-Barnett family from Inverness, Sims' neighbors, actually, to tell their story of how they homeschool their kids, how they grow their vegetables, how they work with the community. They spent several months collecting garbage from Tamales Bay. They built it into a beautiful art sculpture that won the prize at the event down in Inverness, and really see how they integrate their ideas into their community in homeschooling their kids, how they're teaching them mathematics and languages and other things based on their work, and really working closely with the community out in West Marin. Then we'll have Michelle Kaufman, actually next week, who is a modular designer, designer of modular green homes. And in the future, we'll have Robert Reich, Mark Lakeman, John Francis, the Planet Walker, and other people. In the spring of this year, we're also inviting Jeff Chase, who has done a lot of work with colleges throughout the nation in working with faculty and administration to introduce eco-literacy into the curriculum, and he's going to be working with the College of Marin faculty to do that. So we're definitely a fledgling group at the Center for Regenerative Design. We're at the stage where we're trying to find out as much as possible from the community in what ways we can fill the need and how can we connect the dots between the different organizations of higher ed in the county and with the County of Marin itself and the nonprofits and the for-profit groups. And how can we take some bold steps to make that happen? So now I'd like to show just a two-minute video segment which will show some commentary of participants who came to our initial community roundtables earlier this year.
I think it's really, really exciting to think about an institution, a big institution like the College of Marin, that not only has a big effect on our community, but also has a big effect, of course, on its students and what they do in the future. To think that an institution like that could be seriously incorporating sustainability in terms of the way it teaches and what it teaches and also how it even operates is tremendously exciting.
We're going to manifest the vision of the countywide plan in sustainability, because if you're going to find anywhere where you can establish social equity, how do you do it? You establish social equity through education and skills.
When we look at the buildings that we teach in, we say, well, they're not really efficient in their use of energy. We talk about energy efficiency, we teach it in our classes, but the buildings we're in aren't practicing it. So there's a problem there.
There's so many amazing things happening in Marin, and a lot of the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing, and we don't really know what each other's doing and what's going on. And I think if there was, and then there, you can network online and you can send emails, but it's the face-to-face piece that's really important. And so far my experience with these gatherings is actually seeing people face-to-face, and it just, everybody's projects and organizations become more real.
I would like to see high schoolers become better prepared to take advantage of the greening of a campus like this and come in with a better ecological understanding so that they could appreciate the kinds of efforts that are going to be made.
And the objective is really to educate the community, to educate the campus, the staff, the faculty, the students, and to see in what ways the Center for Regenerative Design can facilitate the dialogue between the campus, the college, and the community.
You know, with all this talking and thinking and creativity, that actually it can create something that people can see and touch and feel and come to and say, oh, this is what sustainability looks like. I've heard this word for 5 years, and I didn't have a clue what they were talking about, but I get it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andre. I love the word sustainability. To me, it represents the maturation of the environmental movement to bring in concepts of equity and economics. And as a politician, for me to survive in the long run, I have to make my environmental vision add up for the economy at the same time. People in America live, eat, breathe the Wall Street Journal and use the metrics of unemployment and unemployment rates and interest rates and so forth as the metrics they use to gauge quality of life. And so one of the critical realities of the movement, if you will, is to bridge the gap between the requirements of natural systems and the non-negotiable terms that we need to obey to sustain life on Earth and connect those with the economy that sustains our quality of life and our excitement and our innovation and the engine of our activity day to day. And the word sustainability truly does that. It tries to bridge the three E's, and that theme is baked in hard to our countywide plan update that's due to be adopted by our Board of Supervisors in about a year's time. But in thinking about what to say today on a panel that's talking about visionary architecture, as much as I like the word sustainability, it didn't capture for me the kind of theme that I wanted it to hit with the work we're doing at the county and sort of why I get out of bed every day. And it has to do with regeneration and vision. The Earth is in the sixth great extinction right now. Every time I open the newspaper, I want to weep when I look at the fellow beings that we're losing faster and faster. It isn't good enough to sustain. We have to restore. We have to regenerate. We have to rebuild. And we have to utterly revision what it means to be a healthy, wealthy, happy American. We have the biggest ecological footprint, the United States, or one of the biggest. Marin County, as the second smallest county in the Bay Area, has the dubious honor of the third largest ecological footprint, driven by our wealth and our good lifestyle and the big SUVs many of us drive, and the fact that we can't afford to house our workers in our own county and everybody's driving in from somewhere else to come to work, stuck on a freeway that's gridlocked where everybody belches out greenhouse gas and pollution while they wait to do a 2-hour commute from Petaluma to the Civic Center. The system is broken. And so I was thinking about regeneration and vision, and I thought about our panel today to think about something like regenerative vision. How do you envision architecture and community and a set of fairly dry policies that guys like me create? How do you make sure that those policies and the rules and the tax code give us incentives to do the right thing instead of the wrong thing? Right now, parents in Mill Valley are incented to drive their kids to school because it's not safe to let them walk down the road with a bunch of SUVs barreling by. I got into a lot of big arguments with my old girlfriend about that. And the fact is our systems and our signals that we send, our pricing structures, are fatally flawed. And it's actually, as Paul Hawken often says, we are on the track of a suicide economy. And it's just a matter of time as we watch our fellow beings blink out, which makes me sad. Pretty soon we start to blink out. And that's not acceptable. Climate change and species loss make it absolutely imperative for guys like me with jobs like mine to do two critical things. I have to do everything right now. There's no time to fool around. And I have to make it easy to be green for everyone in the county. My dream would be to achieve an American policy structure for the United States so that you didn't even have to think about whether you were doing the right thing when you buy your vegetables or get yourself to work. Wouldn't that be amazing? If the prices you paid and the decisions you made were natural, life-sustaining, restorative activities, we'd have a home run. That's what restorative vision is to me. In the meantime, for us mere mortals, I think it means we have to walk our talk everywhere possible. And I can rattle off a list of things we're trying to do at the county. We signed the Urban Environmental Accords. We're trying to cut our greenhouse gases. We're using B20 biodiesel in our county fleet. Sometimes we get it up to B30, depending on the price. We're revising the countywide plan so that virtually every aspect of community design and policy gets substantially greener in the next 20 years. These policies have to transform our communities. Transportations. We need bikes, feet, shuttles, train, everything we can get our hands on to get people out of their single-occupant cars. We need to change the fuel that those cars use. My colleagues and I just signed a resolution joining the plug-in hybrid effort nationally to send a soft order to anyone who will listen to us that we're dying to buy a fleet of hybrids so that the first 20 miles we drive every day is pure electric, and then we click on a hybrid engine. Still, it's a fossil fuel device, and that's not sustainable. The thing I like about that word sustainability is that it's a real hard line. Using fossil fuel and using synthetic chemicals that build up in our biosphere, not sustainable, period. So when you think about what you can do if you're running an organization, I run a business that has 2,100 employees in it, we have to walk our talk everywhere we can. Compostable plates and cups, better transportation policy, better use of water, sustainable gardens that don't require watering in our Mediterranean summer climate, platinum grade LEED building standard affordable housing, Cities for Climate Protection program that drives our greenhouse gas consumption down, energy aggregation, zero waste. We're supporting a product take-back resolution and legislation for the state of California to develop product take-back rules so that rather than dumping the burden on local government, hapless local government, with a bunch of solid waste and used old computers and so forth, the idea is that our manufacturers ought to take the products back and disassemble them and reuse them. And the pricing signal ought to be baked into the product in the first place. Germany did this over 10 years ago. British Columbia is doing it now. The state of Washington is ahead of us. There's no reason the fifth largest economy on earth can't follow. I warned our Democratic nominee to the Assembly yesterday, Jared Huffman. I warned him, the day you get elected, we need to talk about product take-back, pal. Food composting, you name it. We need to do it all yesterday. I want to tell a little story. When I serve on the board of an agency called the Sonoma Marin Area Rail Transit, SMART, and one of the coolest things I got to work on over the last 2 years was designing a new development on 5.5 acres of land we own in downtown Santa Rosa. It's called Railroad Square. And we developed a set of criteria that we wanted our vendors to meet. Living wage, contract labor agreements, LEED Platinum, green building design, 200 units of affordable housing along with the 150 units of market rate housing, no parking, big bicycle parking lot, shuttles, the whole works. And every economic consultant who came to our board meeting for 3 straight months said it was impossible. And I just consistently said, okay, maybe, let's give it a try. Let's set these standards. Let's put a stake in the ground and ask the private sector, can you meet us? Can you meet these criteria? And let's let the market tell us it can't be done. And guess what? We got 5 proposals from companies, from Creative Housing Associates to John Stewart Company and others, who said, we'll give you a LEED Platinum community design, and you will have no parking, living wage agreements, all the equity, economic, and green features you want. And if that project comes off as planned, we will have the first 500-unit LEED Platinum certified community design project west of the Mississippi. Thrilled. So the moral of that story is want it all now and demand it. Demand it from your local government people like me. Demand it every time you buy groceries at the store. Every decision you make, demand the right thing. And tell people what you want. I was in Whole Foods last week and was bummed out about all the paper bags. Going over to Molly Stone, we've got plastic bags. And I'm thinking, where's the canvas? Where's my free canvas bag that we can reuse? And so these kinds of automatic decisions that go, that people aren't even conscious of, we need to start changing the rules everywhere we possibly can. Ken Wilber, who's a philosopher, talks a lot about the fact that we dwell too often in the lower right-hand quadrant, as he puts it, looking at systems and policies and fairly dry systems artifacts. And that's my job. And what he recommends that we do more and more is think for ourselves, how do I make this stuff juicy and luscious for me? What is it that turns me on? How could I imagine my community in a way that I'd want to say yes when I get up in the morning? Sim van der Rijn mentioned that Marin's very proud heritage of saying no to lots of stupid things. I stand on the shoulder of giants. And I'm deeply grateful for that heritage. Marin County dodged a lot of bullets. If you ever want to freak yourself out, go to the library here at the Civic Center and up to the California room and look at the 1965 general plan. That thing is a nightmare. 8-lane freeway over the top of Angel Island, up the spine of Tiburon, right through Tam Valley, feeding the 350,000 houses that guys like Huey Johnson, Marty Griffin, and the other heroes that Sim mentioned. They stopped it, not barely 30 years ago. Saying no to stupid things is a critical piece of the movement. We need to keep doing that. But the trick now for the environmental movement, for the sustainability movement, nope, for the regenerative movement,
yeah,
is figuring out what is it we say yes to? What is that? At the end of Al Gore's movie and lecture, where he displays in terrifying detail what we're facing with climate change, there's a grasping need for the vision of what it is we say yes to. And for guys like me who are dealing with policy, I have a huge list. I have a lifetime of entertainment available, and it'll take me a whole lifetime to get this stuff done. Shuttles, bikes, feet, a lot of the things I talked about. Better energy, there's a ton of work to do. But for all of us as human beings, what we need to get clear on is what is it that I want to say yes to every morning? What is it that I want my community to look like? And so what I would like to propose as a wrap-up to my comments is that when you go home tonight, close your eyes and think about your house and your town and the vision you have when you walk through that town, and imagine how that would look if it was absolutely restorative and beautiful to you, except no lower standard. What would Mill Valley, Tiburon, San Francisco, Santa Rosa, what would those places look like if they weren't those dead zones that Sim mentioned at the beginning? What would they look like if they were utterly breathtaking and sustaining and beautiful to you? And then really try to get clear with that vision and describe it to guys like me. Say, McGlashan, I want Marin County to look like this. Permeable paving, grass sidewalks, trees, little stores without the big ugly glass and plastic signs, maybe. Organic food everywhere, locally grown within 150 miles. And you can imagine there's a whole set of policies and initiatives and expenditures that guys like me need to implement to achieve that vision with and for you. So imagine your community utterly breathtaking and beautiful to you, every animal that currently survives within 100 miles, and the plants that we share Earth with. If we could create beautiful community for plants, animals, and people, we would finally have a shot at getting sustainable. I desperately want that for Marin County. My biggest threat to my friends is I ain't leaving until I get that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all, panel. Let's see, let's have some dialogue and questions now. Do we have we need a mic for that, or you just want to? Okay, go ahead.
We should probably both take that one, Sim, the architect.
What would it do if we...
If we wanted to see the vision that he's portraying, it's beautiful, I'd love to see it.
Well... you start to look at why the cost of the housing is high. And if you analyze it piece by piece, you'll find actually building green does not the first cost does not need to be more, and the cost over time is the savings are there. I think about, frankly, survivability. I want houses, I want college buildings that can survive a few days without electricity, because we may be in that situation, or without all the things we take for granted in infrastructure. We need buildings that can survive without that. And that doesn't need to cost more. As a matter of fact, more and more of the data is coming in shows it doesn't cost more. That's why these developers can promise the highest level of the USGBC standard within a reasonable cost frame. It's just it what it does require, and I didn't address this, is a different kind of a design process. And Fran White talked about designing the design process. That's part of the critical middle, the missing link, because the design industry and the construction industry are used to doing things in a linear, parceled out way, and they're not used to really sitting down and doing what Charles said, is what is the juiciest thing that we can do? You know, how can we really make this juicy and still meet the cost requirements? And it's happening all over. But, you know, a lot of people are risk averse and just want to make sure we're not going to take any risk. Oh, you're talking about affordable. Well, but, I'm doing the designing the fireside project in Mill Valley. My office did that. That's the first green affordable housing project in Marin. It was a lot of work to do, but its first cost is no more, and it meets all the affordable in terms of affordability. It's one of the Marin is so short of affordable units. I mean, it's also a thing that the college will have to look at is how to incorporate housing, both for people that are scaling down but interested in continuing their education. They're older, they're retired, or they be walking on the campus. So if you're talking about the affordability, you're talking that affordability and green. Yes, we can do both. In some cases, we got to work with the county and work with other agencies to change the code and rule structure. I used to be the chief code enforcement officer for the state of California. I got Title 24 passed, which overnight required all buildings, all commercial buildings and residential buildings, to reduce energy consumption 40%. It took a long fight with the construction and real estate industry. I had to go out and build the examples to show that they could do it. And that's the main thing. We need examples that people can see that you can do these things rather than just dream them. You know what they are as well as we know.
The reality is, the good news is there's no disadvantage to building green relative to the stock of affordable housing. The bad news is that the housing costs in general are driven by unbelievably high land prices. I think the bottom line is we'll never build our way out of the problem. What we're going to end up doing is facing it as a public policy that we're going to have to build affordable housing to have a sustainable economy and a just society. And so bottom line is it's going to end up being a public good that we have to finance through public funds.
You over here.
If I could add on to this issue, I'm an advocate of affordable housing and green-built housing myself. Looking at the prefab industry, the construction industry, and even now bank financing is moving to support this movement. So you've been a pioneer in this, and costs are coming down, but land costs are the critical issue stopping affordable housing. Here at Sonoma County, as the critical example where we're focused on, the Sylvester property, St. Vincent's School property, was shot down several proposals with kind of in the attitude that we want open space. And I'm asking the question, is there going to be any county-led effort to really do a green-built mixed-use proposal, perhaps on that site, maybe with county intervention economically, buying in, supporting it on issues, to really create a project that will not just privately funded, that will
I want to answer your question and then tell a quick story about the fireside, because we need help from the state badly. In fact, I'll just do that first, but I promise I won't forget your question. I must have spent 50 hours spread out over 8 months fighting with the state finance committee to get the fireside project financed, because the state, in its wisdom, said, interesting, land costs are so high in Marin County, we shouldn't fund those projects. We ought to fund them in the Central Valley, which means that expensive coastal counties, and we're all expensive now from San Diego to Del Norte County, but all the affordable housing, using that wisdom, will end up sprawling through the Central Valley. Nightmare. And I literally had to call Sunny McPeak, the Secretary of Housing, and beg for her help on a Friday night at 8 o'clock to save this project. It was insane. I was, Sunny, we've got to put the financing where it's most expensive. And yeah, I understand the legislature doesn't quite know how to connect those dots, but the funding's got to step up right where we need it most, where land is prohibitively expensive. And that's a bit ironic, but that's exactly the kind of help we need. So my second issue for Mr. Huffman, assuming he gets elected on November 7th, is, oh, we desperately need state help in the very counties where land prices are going through the roof. And one of the reasons land prices are going through the roof in places like Marin is we didn't trash ourselves like many other communities have. So saying no to stupid stuff is still critical. That gets me to St. Vincent Silvera. The terrible problem with the proposal that came in 6 years ago is they were going to bulldoze enough habitat to send a few species into extinction. Can't happen. Non-negotiable. No. And so while a lot of people accuse the enviros who fought that as being NIMBYs, I'm actually firmly aligned with them, because you can't say yes to something that violates sustainability right over here. I had a very hard-hitting conversation with one of my colleagues on the board once who talked about trade-offs and balance. You know, sometimes we'll do a little more economy, sometimes we'll do a little environment, and we'll kind of trade between the three E's. And I said, you can't do that anymore. Non-negotiable. The economy is a wholly owned subsidiary of society, and if society ain't just, fair, and equitable, the economy can't really function well. And society is a wholly owned subsidiary of the environment. We will never win by saying, well, we've saved enough green space in Marin, let's bulldoze this other habitat. Because the problem is we've learned in the 30 years since the visionary hardline work of Marty Griffin and others, is we've learned just how valuable the oak uplands and the baylands truly are. That's an intact ecosystem. We need to save it. It's actually very rare. And frankly, as Barbara Salzman would say, every square foot is sacred. We need to restore everything we possibly can. So the trick for affordable housing, sustainable community, and building is to reuse our existing developed footprint incredibly elegantly and well. So that might, I often joke with our planning director, rain should not fall and hit a parked car in Marin. The land is too damn valuable for that. If we have parking lots like we do right out here, we are guilty of gross lack of creativity. I mean, what a dismal use of bulldozed habitat, right? So whatever ends up at St. Vincent's, I think, will be tight, concise, very close to the H, very probably green-built, mixed use, but constrained off the habitat. So no 2,000 homes sprawling up all over the hills, but nice and tight. And we look forward to seeing that.
There is another opportunity, and that is federal, state, and county lands that can be redeveloped. I mean, in 1979 and 80, my partner at the time, Peter Calthorpe, and who now is kind of the international pope of smart growth around the world, we did a proposal at Barbara Boxer's suggestion for Hamilton Air Force Base, which the General Services Administration was going to declare surplus. We set up a joint powers authority between the county and Novato, which made us eligible to get that entire Novato site, the entire Hamilton site, for $1. We did a plan which was really the first smart growth plan. There were no single family houses. Every house had solar access. We saved some of the best land for growing, not just for the food production, just so people and kids growing up could see what food looks like when it's in the ground. Because they growing up without seeing that.
we did all those things. We had an election in the county. Novato voted no because they, but we still were alive for a while until Reagan was elected, and then they decided no joint use powers agreement. The land goes to the highest and best. The land goes to the highest bidder, and we have Hamilton now, which is, you know, a community. Well, the one thing that survived from our plan is that we had proposed tearing up the runways, and I remember Bob Romier, who was a nice supervisor from San Rafael, just getting redder and redder in the face and saying, "You mean to tell me you're going to tear up perfectly good concrete and return it to mud?" See, so. Anyhow, but, you know, I think driving by Lucas Valley Road, there's the juvenile center. That looks like it's very underutilized. We need an inventory. What, freeways. When I was in Sacramento, I said, well, why don't we just build underneath the freeways? You know, in Sacramento, the freeways are raised. There's parking under them. Well, we use them for parking for state employees, but we could be building under our freeways. So we got to be smart. Let's take a look at all the land that we own. That's particularly in urban areas, we being the city, the county, the state, and the feds even, because we are the feds as well, and see how they can be reconfigured into knocking down that land price. And the college is a player in this too, because they have properties. And it all cannot be used, is not all going to be used for educational purposes.
Can I add one thing? This aggressively, the president of Sonoma State University took the lead not only in raising the standard of that university and getting corporate private funding endowment like never before. They are now on an initiative to build housing on the campus and just bought 40 acres, as I was told, for student faculty housing. Leasing and purchase for the faculty, so there's investment to the future. Again, the state institution with private initiative money participating in the banks in a positive demonstration of the president program. We don't already
I'll add a quick thing to that. And, you know, I mentioned the AC conference, that one of the colleges that won the award was Berea College out of Kentucky that Tim worked on because of the eco village housing that they did in that college, which is becoming a model now for other colleges to emulate.
Yes, sir.
Well, again, the speaker we're having next week is Michelle Kaufman, who started the Modular Green Homes, the Breeze House, and the
Glide.
The Glide House. And she's actually developing now one for urban areas. So I would encourage you to come to that talk, or, you know, that's where she'll talk about it. Her model is very flexible because she can design everything from a studio home to a four-bedroom home. And so you mix and match and you pick your components that you want. And the idea is the home, I believe, is fabricated and built in Seattle, Washington. Then it's trucked down to the area. And then she worked with local contractors, in this case here in Marin, to build a foundation. And they go through all the permitting. She lives in one herself. She lives in Black Point. And I went to meet her there and showed me what it was. It's very, very interesting. And it was featured in Sunset Magazine. And there are other companies now that are also moving in that direction. In terms of outreach, I really see it as a core mission of the Center for Regenerative Design. How exactly what I said, we don't want just one green islands of colleges and high schools. How do we then work with the nonprofits, work with the green businesses, work with the county in what they're doing to figure out, it's almost like scales and powers of 10. How do we take it beyond the college community into the greater county, and then the county, we got to start looking at the region, and then so forth. So it keeps going up. And And even at the personal level, you know, start with the personal actions that Charles talked about, to the family, to the community. So it's all interwoven. At the College of Marin, Olney Hall, if you go to our center's website, it's greenmarin.net, and we have all the schedule there of what's coming up. October 27th is Michelle Kaufman. November 3rd is Lakeman.
John Lakeman, who runs City Repair in Portland, which is just a citizen group. We're interested in citizen initiatives. There's a group that just started taking over dangerous intersections and redesigning them or closing them.
Yeah.
So we're interested in Charles has told us, and I know too, having been a state bureaucrat, you know, all the problems we got to deal with. I think we need more civil initiative. We need more people actually demanding, you know, that you do that. Start doing things that are juicy and make sense. Yes, ma'am.
You're mentioning intersections. Reminds me of roundabouts.
Yeah. Yes.
The county has very few, but a couple. And I understand they cost less to begin with, and they cost less to maintain.
Does Marin County have any roundabouts? We do have a couple, and... Oh, yes. Does Marin County have roundabouts, and how well are they working? Truckee, California actually convinced Caltrans in two cases to use them. And so we're very intrigued, and we're looking at whether we can use more of those. One of the boldest ideas that I've heard lately is to put a big roundabout right in front of Tam High School in Mill Valley at the bottom of Miller Avenue. Could be very cool. We need to do something to make that whole situation a little safer. The problem, actually, that has recently come up, and this is kind of living proof of the difficulty of getting anything done in our society, it turns out that it's incredibly difficult for a vision-impaired person to make their way through an intersection like that, because you've got cars bolting into a roundabout and coming out at random times. And so if you're visually impaired and you're trying to make your way through, how do we put signals and lights to keep a car in the circle waiting to get out again while someone's getting... So anyway, all of a sudden, it's like we're flummoxed by this new problem. And thanks to ADA rules, which are making us think, as we all age, Marin County has 17% and growing, people over 65 years old. Suddenly, it's all of us, and we've got to think about our later years. How are we going to motor around the county, especially if we drive policy to bikes and feet and chairs and stuff? And now we've got to think again about how those roundabouts actually work. So it's always harder than I think. That's been the fun part of going to work in government.
Question?
Oh.
Yeah. That's great. The comment was she moved from Santa Monica and found Marin to be surprisingly unfriendly to pedestrians. I want to tip my hat to Santa Monica. Some of the coolest sustainability thinking for smart growth and community design is coming from that city in California. Right on. That's great. That's great.
We had a question over here. Did you have any questions for me?
And how do we see some progress?
The question was, what can the county do to step up its commitment to green building for its own stuff and how to project that out to the city governments and so forth? I think the quickest answer is as much as possible everywhere we can. My colleagues and I have set a LEED Gold requirement on all of our own county buildings. So whenever the county does a building, I'll tell a funny story. We're building a new fire station up on Throckmorton Ridge, and we got a commitment from staff that that building will be certified to LEED Gold environmental standards. But the decision was made, let's not do solar because we can get the LEED Gold certification other ways. And so we approved it, and I went home, and I couldn't sleep that night. And so I yanked the thing back to the board, and I said, that roof of that fire station has 1,000 people who hike by it, who go up by the mountain home and go up in the south side of Mount Tam. You know what? We got to get the solar on there. It's just too damn good a billboard. So anyway, we got the LEED Gold plus solar on top of that. And so
I'd like to respond to your question.
Let me finish one thing. So the bottom line is the county's committed to do LEED Gold, but the trickiest part in Marin is that we've got 11 incorporated cities who get to make their own separate call on building codes and zoning. Mm-hmm. And one of our strongest hopes is as we adopt the new countywide general plan that indicates green building as a sort of as a mantra, we'll be able to use that to build support in the other cities. The problem that we run into is the cities are very, very touchy about taking orders from supervisors. And so we have to tread very gently and get our staffs working together. And we now have a sustainability team that goes out and gives energy efficiency advice. And we're trying to cajole everybody to come along with us as a family so that we can green the whole county. Some of the cities have pretty good green building standards. Novato's got a LEED Silver requirement. Mill Valley keeps hesitating, but I hope someday they'll get a LEED Gold thing going. And it's just moral suasion, frankly. So we have to just push and push. That's another area where Sim's idea of getting really intensive citizen involvement. If people showed up at open time, every board and council in the county, and this is true of the water board and the sewer districts, but every city council and the county board, we have a 3-minute open time. I would encourage you, if you care about these issues, come in and say, hey, board, hey, council, we want you to join Cities for Climate Protection. We want you to use green building standards in your code. We want you to start requiring it of major remodels and new buildings. We need your help, because right now it's sort of a patchwork, as Ed has indicated.
I mean, I was just going to respond by saying I agree with you. There are many, many places that are greener than we are. I think part of the problem is we're generally a wealthy county. People are busy, though. I think people are kind of smug. They think I know all about sustainability. I mean, I've worked in Kentucky, like in Berea, and people say solar, what it is, you know, and then you sit down and they actually listen while you explain, talk about photosynthesis, and then talk about what's photoelectric, you know, you're taking all these disordered stream of electrons and you're turning into these soldiers that are producing electricity, and they get really excited, you know. It's just like an election when, you know, Gore's advisors say, oh, you can't talk about energy in these red states because they're idiots. They don't know anything about it. And, you know, and he listened, even being from Tennessee, where it's not true. You know, it's not true. The so-called red states are as interested in these solutions, maybe more interested because there's jobs in it, you know, and there's not many people here going to be working in a solar factory, rather than. So I think there's a lot of smugness, and I don't think there's enough involvement in all levels of local and county, you know, all the elected and appointed positions. I don't think there's enough involvement, and that is going to be part of what we're going to focus on, and hope you'll come to our talks during the year, because like we're going to have former Secretary of Labor Robert Reich, who has a pretty strong message about what it takes to be a really good citizen to maintain democracy. And we're failing in this country to be good citizens. And hence, at every level, democracy is not working very well. So we got to start here. We're starting here at home.
I want to add one quick thing in terms of promoting some of these ideas in sustainability and solar panel. Charles's story reminds me of two things. One is in talking to SPG Solar, who's was considered the fastest growing company in the country a couple of years ago in terms of their growth in promoting solar energy, how important they feel in terms of every project that they do in high schools and in schools in the county, because it's such a high visibility, high education arena, and how critical that is, not only because of the kids then go tell their parents, but also it's a way to educate their kids, again, what I talked to earlier, in terms of becoming part of their daily lives. California Academy of Sciences, their LEED Platinum building, which is being built right now, they're decided to put solar around the perimeter of their green roof, primarily as an education. It only provides something like 5% of their energy use. However, they felt it was such a high-profile building that they needed to educate the public on solar, and that's what they did. They actually get their energy very, very cheaply because they get it from Hetch Hetchy. So that wasn't the issue, but they realized that they wanted to educate the population, and that's why they went for that perimeter solar panel design.
Last question. Let's see. One or two? Yeah.
I want to thank Charles and Sim for the work in Marin County you've done for sustainability. It's tangible, and I've seen evidence of that. But, Charles, I want to respond to your saying no to something, riding bikes, and it's too dangerous in Mill Valley or the community you were talking about. In Fairfax and San Anselmo, we realized we had that problem. So the parents got together, put up signs before school started, saying, school starting, be careful, kids on bikes. We had events where people got together to talk about how to be safer. We had the city take trucks out of the bike lanes. I filled potholes, I still do, that are on the bike trails, along the dangerous intersections that kids are crossing. And you know what? We had 210 kids walk or bike to school out of 340.
Awesome.
As far as 4 miles away. Well done. We had to get a crossing guard from the county. Still don't have one. This is at Sir Francis Drake, one of the busiest streets or intersections in the county. They said, you can't get a crossing guard. We have hundreds of kids crossing there every morning. We need a crossing guard there. The bike lane right out of the Civic Center here. You know, I ride my bike here yesterday. I didn't do it today. It was too dangerous. Leaving the Civic Center of Marin County, you have to go on the freeway on-ramp, cross it, where cars are coming behind you at 40 or 50 miles an hour, to get on the road, to get to Lincoln. Absurd, right in front of your county building.
Yeah.
What does that say?
Yeah.
Anyways, Marin County is one of the leading counties in sustainability, planning, and policy. Let's put it into practice.
Excellent. Hey. Woo!